It is another exclusive from this programme, and it is that the Health and Social Care Board in Northern Ireland has told the Nolan Show that they would need significant additional time and analysis to work out the degree in which waiting lists have been a contributory factor in any deaths. Why is that important? Because there are 300,000 people in Northern Ireland currently on an outpatient waiting list to see a consultant in Northern Ireland. The former head of the Health and Social Care Board, he was the former chief executive, used to get a hard time when he came in here. John Compton with us this morning. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. First of all, tell us, John, hopefully in everyday language, what an SAI is.
Well, it stands for Serious Adverse Incident. So when something very significant goes wrong in the treatment or care of an individual, staff are encouraged to report that as a learning exercise so that there's the opportunity not to make the same mistake or same error again. It's really an education, training, development issue, and it's a review of the circumstances of an individual case.
So what type of thing is a serious adverse incident?
Well, it can range from all sorts of things. It could range perhaps from a very unexpected outcome in a surgical procedure, maybe someone had died or something of that nature, or perhaps there was a wrong organ removed from an individual, or there might be an issue where there's a serious medication incident which has had fairly difficult outcomes for a patient. Those sorts of things are the type of thing that occurred. It's quite clear there's a process. It's meant to do two things. It's meant to both ensure that if there's been an untoward event, that it's properly looked at, and if that untoward event is an event of public interest, that it's also looked at.
So what we did as a programme is we contacted the Health and Social Care Board and we focused on these serious incidents. And we took two schools of thought. We wanted to know from them how many incidents were there, serious incidents were there, where patient waiting times played a part. And then we wanted to know how many incidents were there where waiting times actually contributed to someone's death. So those were the two areas that we were focusing on. And we have got what seems to be conflicting information here from the system, from the health system. And let me tell you why. We asked them, here's the question we asked. We said, has the Health and Social Care Board received serious adverse incident notifications of adverse events where patient waiting times played a part in each of these years, 2016, 17, 17, 18, 18, 19, 19, 20. And what they told us is, they started off by telling us that all SAIs are treated with the utmost importance and go through a robust review process in order to identify and share learning in a meaningful way, ensure all steps to minimise future risk and to enhance care are taken. So in other words, John, they tell us that there is a robust review process, and then when we ask for the numbers, look at what they say. And this isn't about death, this is about serious incidents. They say, without a manual review of the 1,428 serious incidents received, it is not possible to provide information in relation to the numbers or the degree in which waiting times are a contributing factor. So how are they saying they look at it in a robust way and a meaningful way, and then they can't draw any conclusions from it?
Well, it's clearly inconsistent what's being said to you. But, I mean, to explain the inconsistency, I think it goes back to waiting times. When the serious adverse incidents are being looked at, I don't think anybody ever expected that waiting times would be part and parcel of that. So the way in which the system is set up doesn't include or doesn't think about waiting times. It thinks about somebody doing something wrong to a patient or some event occurring which is wrong to a patient. It doesn't actually consider that waiting times might be part of it. This system is about what I would call a normal operating health and social care service.
But we're not in normal times.
Well, that's the point. That is the point. The point is that clearly they've indicated to you that on the basis of now waiting times being raised, they're going to have to go back over all that information individually to see whether waiting times contributed or didn't contribute to an event.
So it sounds to me, and you're the former chief executive of the Health and Social Care Board, you used to have to answer these questions.
I did, yes.
On behalf of the system.
Yes.
Are you saying there's a fundamental flaw in the system, that there's a system set up to deal with normal times and we are in abnormal waiting list times.
I think that is the case, actually. I mean, it's quite straightforward. You know, you can't have the numbers of people that we currently have waiting and not expect that for a number of those people, the waiting itself contributes to an adverse outcome for them. But I don't think our system was ever designed for that. Our system was designed to respond to waiting times in the normal course of events, you know, seeing people in 9 weeks, 18 weeks journeys, all of that sort of stuff. So it assumed all of that's happening, but we're in a very different place. I mean, we now have essentially two services operating. We have a fantastic emergency service. So if you or I are ill or are involved in an accident, we'll get very good treatment, exceptionally good treatment. But on the elective side, it has deteriorated tremendously. And we have, you know, a good service when you get it, but a very poorly arranged service in terms of being able to respond to the numbers of people who need those elective interventions.
So that fundamental process of and system, because there needs to be a system, given the volume of patients that will be treated in Northern Ireland. You're telling me that you feel the wrong system is in place to now identify serious incidents related to waiting times. Is that what you're saying?
I think yes, and I think that's acknowledged, isn't it, in the reply that they've given you, because they've said, look, we have a system, we look at everything very thoroughly. And then when you asked about the waiting times, I said, well, actually,
we don't know.
We don't look at the waiting times. So we'll have to review all of those individually to see what part, if at all, waiting times played in the outcome.
So does that mean that the system and therefore the public in Northern Ireland are blind to the actual impact waiting times is having on patient outcomes?
I think they're blind in the sense of being able to give you specific data and information. If you talk to anybody who works in the system, they all know that waiting times is contributing to a much poorer outcome for many patients. So there won't be a doctor or nurse anywhere who will not tell you, if you speak to them, that waiting times is a bad thing and that it's contributing to a potentially adverse outcome. But our system was never designed to operate in waiting times the way we have them right now.
But John, there are a lot of big brains in the health service. Why haven't they been designing a system?
Well, I think, you know,
Surely they've got to look. If the waiting times are as they are, surely it must be a priority to collate information around it.
I think you've clearly stimulated that, and clearly they've responded to it and said they're going to look at it and do the review. I mean, I think the issue for us here is that over the past 2 or 3 years, we have just drifted into a place where waiting times are irrelevant. You know, if you're telling somebody they have to wait 2, 3, or 4 years to be seen, you might argue there isn't a waiting time at all. You're just not going to get seen. That's the truth of the matter. There is no sense of what perspective, what is a waiting time? You know, just adding up a whole pile of weeks and telling somebody you're going to be 220 weeks or something before you get seen, what does that actually mean? It, you know, for the individual, from their point of view, it means maybe I'm not going to get seen, because that's what they think. You know, they assume they're going to be seen within a reasonable time. No one can consider 220 weeks or numbers of that, which have been quoted over the last couple of days, as reasonable.
You know, and I don't know whether it's because of, you know, my background or not, I don't know whether I've got some type of complex about it or not. It's all psychological. But, you know, I remember times when I didn't have much money and my family didn't have much money, and now I do. And one of the other things that I'm focusing on this, where my brain is going, is this therefore means more than ever before that you have some people in Northern Ireland who will need to be seen. And if they don't have money, John, they're much more likely to die because they're going to be sitting on that waiting list.
Well, that's
not seen. That's what some of these adverse incidents that are not being collated.
Of course.
That's what it actually means. It comes down to class this as well.
Yeah, there are five things that I think are really, really significant about the current waiting lists. The first is that it's probably irrefutable that some people are coming to harm because they're waiting. Secondly, a group of people are living in significant pain and with significant lifestyle issues. Thirdly, I think the staff who are working in the system, because there is no apparent root out, have a sense of defeat. They can't actually do something, and that's really bad. You lose the confidence of the public. But the point you very make is we have created a two-tier system. You know, that is a fact. We have created a two-tier system. The people who are able, I'm sure we could all anecdotally tell you of families who would never have considered going to pay for services, who are now considering paying for services, or sons and daughters who are clubbing together to pay for hip replacement for their mother or their father. That sort of thing is much more prevalent.
There's another thing that we can... In fact, let's bring Newton Emerson into this. Because Newton is an Irish news columnist, and you've been doing some fantastic journalism writing around this subject and saying that there has not been enough questions asked, enough focus on this, and do people actually realise what's going on in our health service in Northern Ireland, Newton?
Yes, I did make an attempt a month ago to get a rough estimate of what the death toll for the waiting list has been over the past 3 years. And I was able to speak to some health professionals off the record who said, firstly, you'll never get a completely accurate figure. It won't be possible because you'll never know how much premature death was due to the waiting list. That's unknowable. People that are dying early. And also, of course, it's going to be very, very difficult to collect figures on deaths for people waiting. But I mean, I asked the question in the Irish News, could this death toll since Dormont's collapse be on the order of the Troubles already? And I was told that was realistic, that we're looking at thousands of preventable and premature deaths over the past 3 years, and unnecessarily due to the waiting list extension.
And what was in your mind when you heard that?
Well, I think that what I was most amazed by was the complete lack of questioning, of outrage, of fuss over this. I remembered stories that I've written about over the past 10 years, where people have talked about death tolls from fuel poverty, from welfare reform, from all sorts of things. There always seems to be people who are very, very quick to come up with a death toll when you have an economic or social policy disaster like this. But nobody, absolutely nobody, had mentioned this before, even though, you know, as John has just told you there, it is absolutely self-evident that this is killing people. And in fact, the only reference I could find to it over the past 3 years was from the Nuffield Trust. That's a very well-respected health policy charity in the UK, and they said themselves also, you know, this figure will not be will never be precisely knowable, but it's clearly not zero, and that should be enough to be considered totally unacceptable.
And here we've been in a news cycle talking about banners and talking about orange and green and talking about Britain v Ireland v the United Kingdom and all that malarkey. I wonder, ahead of people voting, have they actually got in their head? What would the DUP do to reduce the number of deaths in Northern Ireland from people from working class environments who can't afford private care? Well, what would Sinn Féin do? What would the Ulster Unionist Party do? What would Alliance do? What would the SDLP do? What would all these parties actually do? Have they got a plan around this?
Yes, they do. They have the Ben Gower report. In fact, I was just reading the DUP's new manifesto policy document yesterday. They call it The Plan, which has page after page of setting out what is required in the Ben Gower plan to centralise and rationalise health services, to invest in them, to create regional specialist centres, to do away with small and dangerous attempts at local general hospitals and so on. But of course, there have been, I think, and Mr. Cotton could confirm this, I think there have been four such reports over the past 20 years. They're generally stuck down the back of the sofa because it's almost impossible to take that kind of political decision to close a hospital. So even, you know, the fact is that even when we had Stormont, they couldn't do this.
John?
Well, I mean, I think that's right. I think there is a real issue here for us as a public. We do have to understand that if you don't reform and you don't change the way in which the services are operating, then the consequences are you create things like waiting lists. Now, it's not exclusively that. There's no silver bullet to fix a problem like this. It's about understanding the problem. It's about resourcing the problem. It's about reforming a system to respond more sensitively to the sorts of issues that are around on the basis of evidence. But in Northern Ireland, we're notoriously bad at being able to accept that, because it becomes a very parochial debate. it doesn't become a debate about how can we improve the service.
John, that's
where
you need
Ireland.
Political leadership.
Well, I mean, if you know, I have personally strong views. I believe that the political leadership that we currently have, you know, I'm frustrated like lots of people about it. And we live in a complicated society. I understand that. I understand all the things that you need to do in a complicated society to make it work and all the important issues. But, you know, meanwhile, back on planet Earth, where a lot of people, 300,000 of them, are waiting, I think what their number one priority is, would somebody please enable the system to be able to respond more sensitively and make my life more sensible?
We've got more figures that are not in the public domain that we want to put into the public domain this morning. And these figures that I'm about to bring to you... what these figures that I was just checking behind the scenes there, so sorry for the pause. So these figures that I'm about to tell you all about are basically the amount of money that Northern Ireland PLC, in other words, the health service, has invested in the private sector in order to reduce waiting lists. Now, just so that you don't get confused, that is what the health service, and John, you can help me with this, has been doing for many, many years.
Yes, it's about capacity and about a system. If you need 100 things done and your system can do 90, you go to the independent sector to buy the other 10. But you're in control of buying it. It's not willy-nilly. It's done in a proper way. It's done with a proper process and you're in control of it. And that has always been the case.
So so what these figures are, and let me just get this clear behind the scenes, this is money that has been invested to reduce waiting lists, okay? So this is money that has been invested to reduce waiting lists, extra money. Now, to give you a sense of this, in 2012-13, there was £66 million invested in the independent sector to help reduce waiting lists, okay? In 2013-14, there was £61 million. In 2014-15, there was £41 million. Do you know how much there is for 2019-20? Guess. Zero. And that's the story this morning. Mm-hmm. There is zero money being put into the independent sector to reduce waiting lists. It was £17 million in 2018-19 and it's now zero this year.
Well, you see, the issue there is telling you straight away that you're just going to add very sizable numbers onto the waiting list. You need to spend in Northern Ireland, combined both in the system itself by asking people to do more work and in the independent sector, in and around 100 million to 110 million per annum. If you don't spend that amount of money, you'll not control. These numbers will just grow and grow and grow. And the issue for it is...
So it's spiralling.
Well, I think the issue, you know, your listeners this morning, I think everybody knows that the health service is under pressure and all of that. What I think everybody wants to hear is that there is some control being applied to it. A plan that says, look, it's very difficult, we will do something which will get us control of the waiting list and we'll begin to take those waiting lists down. Now, the truth of the matter is, that's 5 years. We can't get this under control in under 5 years and reduce these numbers. And that's the point that...
So it takes 5 years for catch-up?
Well, it's because the numbers are so big now, because the numbers have got to be so colossal.
They're getting worse.
And it'll take longer. The point that Newton was making about the politics and understanding the politics. Sometimes people used to criticise and say, you know, to me that you spent money in the independent sector. You're fleecing the system and you're giving money away and all of that sort of stuff. It's nothing to do with that. It's to do with capacity. You can't. You know, the capacity in the system is not great enough to deal with the demand. You have to use the independent sector.
Are you shocked then when you're talking about how important the use of the independent sector is for capacity? Are you shocked to learn this morning that we're putting zero in for 1920?
Well, what I'm really shocked about is just the number, because the number is far too small and anybody working in the system knows it's too small. Now, that's a consequence. That's a consequence of a constrained budget. It's a consequence of having to make some very difficult choices. But again, the point that Newton was making is all of this is happening. There are a few people who know about it, But no, there's no debate about it anywhere. It astonishes me. It really astonishes there's no debate about this.
And Newton, this is your point. I don't want to load this programme with figures all over the place today. But Newton, to make the point, if we look at that year 2012-13, which we've got figures for, there was a total of 98.98, nearly £99 million was put into the system to help reduce waiting lists. And that's when they weren't as bad as they are now. 99 million put in 2012, 40 million put in this year.
Yes, I think that there is a separate issue we need to consider in the long term about the fact that a lot of the money that goes into the private system is being paid to effectively NHS consultants, taking time off to work from home, basically. I would like to see that looked at in the longer term. But in terms of dealing with waiting lists as we go along, a lot of the waiting list initiatives that the private sector is used for are funded with sort of one-off lumps of cash. The confidence supply money, for example, would have been exactly the kind of thing that would have been used for that. The civil servants would have said, well, here's 10 million, let's try clearing the cataract backlist, for example. And they'd have brought in private operators to do that. And when you don't have ministers in place, when you've got this sort of strange direct rule budgeting we've accepted at Stormont, where Westminster just rubber stamps through a budget with an inflation increase every year, you can't do that. There's nobody to sign that off.
Well, we probably cannot cover this subject properly without talking about the budget squeeze that has actually been put on the system. And the decision makers who are deciding where this money goes, they've got ever-decreasing pots of money. And this is a consequence of it, John.
Yes, I mean, that is the reality. You know, health is one of these all-consuming services, and the costs are rising. And it is quite clear that it needs additional revenue and needs additional funding to be more successful than it currently is. And again, in the absence of a political situation and political setup, you know, it's not particularly fair to blame civil servants or health service managers for doing things when they have no political leadership. You know, it's very difficult. I've said that I don't believe the waiting lists would be where they are today if we had a minister, because the minister couldn't have survived.
But you know who we do have? We have a Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. Well, and now, where's he?
But we do have that, but we have this very confused setup, don't we? Which I don't quite understand.
Well, if he's taking the title, so if Julian Smith, Newton, I'll put this to you, if Julian Smith is taking the title of Secretary of State, where is he? London sets the Stormont budgets in the absence of an assembly. London has imposed austerity budgets on Northern Ireland since 2010. There could be a very serious winter here in Northern Ireland in terms of, associated with the health service, the strikes, the waiting lists. Our waiting lists are worse than anywhere else in the UK. So what's the Secretary of State got to say about this as this winter looms?
Well, it's not true that there's been austerity budgeting in Northern Ireland. Public spending here as a total has always increased right since the financial crash. It's simply been a case of having people in place to allocate it. And under the sort of indirect rule limbo that we're in at the minute, Westminster is taking a daring enough step setting a budget for Stormont at all. That's a very direct intervention, the kind of direct rule we're not supposed to be having. And they don't feel they're capable of going any further than in adding inflation increases or general increases across the board. It's sort of steady as she goes budget. They put every department's budget up by a little bit every year. And when you look at the debates, the short debates, admittedly, that are taking place in Westminster, MPs from all parties, Labour and Conservative and our own parties, that are the DUP and Sylvia Herman that are there, are desperately trying to press the matter to find ways to increase that funding. But the government has to keep coming back and saying, we're not allowed to bring in direct rule. The Irish government has told us it's completely unacceptable. All the parties, apart from the DUP and the UUP, are saying it's unacceptable. So this is the political question to draw the line here. I don't believe that this is being done on purpose. However, attempts, for example, by Reg MP over the past month to pass a private member's bill to bring, he's tried to pass private members' bill through the Lords to bring in health decisions back to Westminster. He said, don't call it direct rules, just have a health minister or health decisions taken at Westminster. He was told by Sinn Féin that was completely unacceptable, that just was just not on, was the verdict. So you know, where have we decided to draw the line on when we call something direct rule? Does it have to be thousands of deaths? That appears to be what's happened.
And why, Newton, do people in Northern Ireland get more exercised about orange-green identity politics than their friends, their colleagues, their mums and dads dying on a waiting list?
Well, I don't know that that's true. I think that, you know, to be frank, you know, you get more exercised about that than we don't know that that's the case for the general public of Northern Ireland. And when it comes to an election,
don't you? Do you not see enough anecdotal evidence about it, about what people come to the streets about, what people get really angry about, what people really scream about? I don't hear people screaming about it. This is the purpose of some of your journalism at the minute. People aren't screaming about this.
No, I don't, Stephen. I don't. Over the past three, four years since Stormont collapsed, we have had remarkable peace on our streets. We haven't had a parading dispute. We've had only a couple of small bonfire issues, despite determined attempts to stir them up. We don't have massive numbers of people on the street. And yet when there was talk of downgrading Down Hospital a few years ago, 15,000 people appeared on the streets of Downpatrick. That's the entire town's population. Now, it just so happened that they were wrong. That hospital should be downgraded and their services should be moved to the Ulster, where they're much safer and they could have a much better and faster service. But the fact is that people are much more motivated than is realised about this issue. Look at the similar issue taking place over Daisy Hill. So I don't know that that's
true. So why
do
they get exercised over the closure of a hospital and not waiting lists then? Why is waiting lists not hitting home?
It's just that when it comes to an election, are you really able to vote along those issues? After all parties are signed up to Bengoa. None, when it comes to it, will probably deliver it. Would any of those parties really turn around and say, we need to build a regional, something like the Regional Cancer Centre? That means your local hospital can't provide it. Look at the breast cancer surgery, for example. That's in the process of being centralised. And once the decision has been taken to close a couple of those centres and centralise them, every party in Northern Ireland is protesting against that, even though that is their own policy. So who do you vote for when it comes to health service reform? That's a difficult decision. Okay. So it's not correct to say that people aren't motivated by this. They simply don't have a political outlet for it.
Okay, Newton Emerson, thank you very much.